Okay, welcome back to Haggadah Highlights. So as usual, our learning is in memory for those of those for whom we would be saying Kaddish. To Yitzchak ben Yosef Yoel, Chana Yitta bas Avram Halevi, Aaron Yaakov ben Chaim Nachman, Chayasara bas Yecheskel Shraga, and the Kraut families are sponsoring Le'ilu Nishmas, their mother, Elka Gittel bas Yisrael Mordechai, their neshama should have an aliyah. Okay, so we're up to the section in the Haggadah that deals with the four sons, the Arba Banim, and of course this is not just sons, but it pertains to children also, to all children, girls and boys, sons and daughters. And the it's interesting that we have these categories. Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, Echad Chacham, Yachad Rasha, Yachad Tam, Echad She'eno Yodei Lishol. We have these four categories. We have the wise son. We have the wicked son, the simple son, the Tam is known as the simple son, and then the son that doesn't know how to ask. Nebuch doesn't know how to ask the questions. And then we go through each one. So we'll go through each one and perhaps share an idea about each one. One very important thought that I saw in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said that even though, of course, it's true that there are these categories, right? When it comes to children, there are these and other categories. We have some children that are chachamim. We have some children that are rachmana litzlan rishayim. Not many, but occasionally we have some. We certainly have some children who are tam, who are simple. And we have some children that are eino yodei lishol, that just don't know how to ask the question. So we certainly have all of these categories. However, Rabbi Yaakov cautioned that we as parents, educators, grandparents also, that interact with their children, have to be careful not to place children in categories before they mature, before they, so to speak, place themselves into categories. And we have to be very careful about that. Why? Because every child is holy, every child has potential, and even a child who might seem like he or she is leaning a little bit more towards the Russia category, but that might just be an immaturity. That might just be different life circumstances or factors that are making things challenging for him or for her. And those things might change. And that child might end up like a chacham, like a tzaddik, like a tzaddikes. So we have to be very, very careful how we categorize children. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky proves this from a halacha. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It's brought by the Ramah. That says that even though the milk from a non-Jewish woman is technically kosher, it's not treif, it's technically kosher, but nevertheless, it should be avoided. A person should try not to have a non-Jewish wet nurse. If a woman's going to be nursing a Jewish baby, it should be a Jewish woman. That's really ideal. Why? Because spiritually, the milk can affect the child, just like we believe that if a person eats treif, there's a certain element of timtum halev. There's a certain spiritual defilement that happens to the person's neshama when they ingest things that are not kosher. So too, when a little baby ingests milk from a non-Jewish woman, you have the same type of timtum halev. What's the source of this ruling of the Rama? So the Bir Hagra in Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rashba, who says that the source is based on a medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu, based on the psukim, that Moshe Rabbeinu did not want a nurse when he was a young baby. And Bas Paro found him, and he didn't want a nurse from any of the Egyptian women. He only wanted a nurse from his mother, from a Jewish woman. So based on that, says the Rashba, that's where we have this practice of not allowing Jewish babies to nurse from a non-Jewish woman. The obvious question is, what's the connection? What's the proof? Moshe Rabbeinu, that was Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the mouth that was eventually going to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was not just a Navi, but he was the Av HaNavim. He was the greatest Jewish Navi that ever lived. He was the greatest, perhaps even the greatest human being that ever lived. So for him not to nurse from a woman that's not Jewish, that's perhaps understandable. But for the rest of us, we're not on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. So how can we extrapolate, how can we learn from that medrash regarding Moshe Rabbeinu to everyone else? And says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, you see that from this halacha, that every Jewish child has potential. Every Jewish boy, every Jewish girl has incredible potential to be a mouth that speaks with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't have Nevi'im anymore. the chances of any of us or any of our children reaching the level of Moshe Rabbeinu is certainly slim to none. But at the same time, to recognize that we essentially, and children essentially, have unlimited potential for Kedusha, unlimited potential for connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to become almost like a Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why we have this halacha that just like Moshe didn't want to nurse from a non-Jew, so to the same thing with our children. It says, Rabbi Yaakov, you see that we have to be so, so careful with young children, not to place them into categories, not to make decisions just because they're acting in a certain way or they seem to be a certain way. Allow them to mature. Allow them to become people. Allow them to chart their own course. Down the road, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see how they chart their course, hopefully in a positive way. But chas v'shalom, to put them into categories in advance. I remember when I was a child, I once got a ride from a Rebbe of mine, a former Rebbe of mine. I had already graduated the North Shore Hebrew Academy. His name was Rabbi Avram Sternberg, a big tzaddik of a man who taught in North Shore Hebrew Academy, I think, for about 30 years or so. He was my eighth grade Rebbe for Gemara. Still remember, we learned Hamafkid, the third parak of Metziah with him. And I remember he once gave me a ride after I had graduated already. And I once asked him, you know, how are the kids? How are the kids this year? Are they good kids? So he looks at me and he says, every kid is a good kid. Every kid is a good kid. Some kids might have this challenge. Some kids might have another challenge. Every kid is a good kid. Now we focus. We let them mature. We let them grow. We let them become who they're going to become. Some of you who have a connection with Hafter might know Rabbi Sif from Hafter. Rabbi Sif is a big tzaddik. He's been in Hafter for decades. Probably taught many of the kids in our shul and in our community. Rabbi Sif was my teacher in Camp Masora many, many years ago. And since then, I've been in touch with him, you know, seeing him around, and, you know, we connect sometimes. I had the opportunity when I was training to be a teacher, I had the opportunity to sit in some of his classes and to observe him as a teacher. And one of the things that's so unique about Rabbi Sif and makes him so special is that when he talks to his students, it doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter what their background is, how from a home they come from, how not from a home they come from. It doesn't matter. He treats each and every boy and each and every girl that he teaches like a future tzaddik or tzaddikas. That's how he talks to them. That's how he talks about them. And it just, you know, I remember as a young teacher observing him, to watch this and thinking to myself, you know, he's talking to these seventh grade girls, these seventh grade boys, like they're like the next Gedolei Hador, like they're the next Rebbetzins of Klal Yisrael. You know, to me, it was a little shocking. You know, I don't know. Hopefully some of them might be, but I'm not sure if they're on that trajectory. But just to hear Rabbi Sif talk about his Talmidim and Talmidos, that the potential that they have to accomplish, to become, and, you know, we never know. We can't judge children as they're growing, as they're maturing. We have to enable them as much as possible to reach that maturity, to maximize their potential. That's our job as parents, as grandparents, as educators, but never chas v'shalom to place them into these categories to begin with. Okay, the first son that we discuss is the Chacham. And the Chacham asks the question, Chacham ahu omer, maha'edos, v'achukim, v'mishpatim, asher tzivah Hashem Elokeinu v'aschem. What are all these laws and these statutes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded you? So what should you do? What's the response? Teach him. He's a Chacham. He's a wise son. So teach him Torah, v'yaf atah, emor lo kilchos ha-pesach. Teach him the halachos of Pesach, of the Korban Pesach, of the laws of Pesach. And then it brings one halach in particular, in Maftirin Achar HaPesach HaFikomen. Okay. Now, one very interesting point here is that we refer to this son as the Chacham, as the wise son. Now, the next son we know we refer to as the Rasha. You would expect that these two sons, the names would be opposites of each other, but they're not. Chacham means a wise son, and Rasha means a wicked son. What the Haggadah maybe should have said, if it wanted to be parallel, is the tzaddik versus the Rasha, or the Chacham versus maybe the Tipesh. Tzaddik and Rasha are opposites, righteous and wicked, and Chacham and Tipesh are opposites, wise and foolish. Well, why did the Haggadah choose Chacham and then move to Rasha? Why are we focusing on the Chacham? Really, the issue is Tzidkus, the issue is his righteousness here. So, excuse me, the Stipler, who we've quoted him in the past, we quoted him, I believe, maybe even yesterday, of Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky. So he answers that you see from here the greatness of Chachma. You see here that the attribute, the trait of chachma, is the trait that's so crucial in one's life. So even though it's true that the point and the focus in these paragraphs might be the tzidkus, might be the righteousness versus the wickedness of the nexa, even though that really might be the focus, nevertheless, we focus on the chachma, we focus on the wisdom, because you see how crucial that element is, you see how crucial that midah, that trait is, to always focus on wisdom and acquiring wisdom and working to develop our wisdom. He quotes the Gemara Nedarim. The Gemara Nedarim on Daf Mem Aleph says that there's no poverty like a person that lacks wisdom. Now, it's one thing to lack money, to lack resources. That's a terrible thing. And we all, of course, always try to help someone out when they're lacking, when they're in need. But someone who lacks wisdom, someone who doesn't have the wisdom, the wherewithal to get around in life and to do what needs to be done, there's no greater poverty. There's no greater tragedy. That same Gemara says, one who has wisdom has everything, and one who lacks wisdom has nothing. Wisdom is so crucial for us in our lives. We mentioned yesterday, or maybe it was 2 days ago at this point, that Zakein, when we talked about the Zakeinim, right? So Zakein, we know Chazal tell us, stands for Ze Shekana Chachma. And we asked, where's the Ches? Zakein, Zayin, stands for Ze. Kuf Nun stands for Kana. So where's the Ches? Where's the Chachma? How do we get Chachma from here? And the Stipler answered, and this relates to what he says here, that's the only real acquisition. Chachma is the only real acquisition in life. Everything else is fleeting. Everything else won't last. And this is one of the reasons why Chachma is so important, because Chachma is what lasts, you know, really lasts forever. Baruch Hashem, as long as a person has his faculties, as long as a person has his mind, Chachma can last forever. And this is what, you know, we mentioned this. I don't want to rehash it, you know, too much. But as the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the Gemara at the end of Kiddushin talks about that so many things in life are fleeting, but when it comes to Chachma, that can stay with a person even into old age, right? The great Gedolim of the Jewish nation are in their 80s, their 90s, and they're still vibrant. People still come to them for Eitzas, for Shiurim, for Piskei Halacha, because Chachma can be with you even into old age. Chachma can be with you forever; it doesn't expire. We know that the Pasuk says in Tehillim, we say it in a base Avel, after davening, Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol. There are so many things in life, you can't take it with you. Right? I believe there's even a song like that, right? You can't take it with you. There's so many things in life that you can't take with you. We can amass money, we can amass property, houses and cars and funds and possessions and all sorts of material goods. And those things are good. And they're great for a year, 5 years, 10 years, sometimes even a couple decades. But then we pass away from this world, and what happens? Sometimes people inherit these items, sometimes they don't. At some point, the house is going to get knocked down. At some point, that car is going to end up in the junkyard somewhere. Well, chachma is something that can last. Chachma also is what connects us to the Ribono Shel Olam. Chachma is what connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we learn His Torah, and we use our intellect, our seichel, to understand the Chachmas Hashem, that's how we connect with our Kadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, the Rambam says that when we talk about Tzelem Elokim, that mankind was created with Tzelem Elokim. So what's the Tzelem Elokim? Says the Rambam, the Tzelem Elokim is the seichel, is the intellect. That's the Tzelem Elokim. So the importance of Chachma is so important. Just in the last couple minutes, I want to talk about the Rasha. So the Rasha asks a question which at face value seems very similar to the Chacham's question. The Rasha asks, Ma ha'avoda azos lachem? And what's our response? Lachem v'lo lo. He's asking, what are these laws to you? He excludes himself. But many of the Mefarshim ask, what do you mean he excludes himself? Look at the Chacham. Look at the Chacham's question. Chacham asks, Ma ha'edos v'achukim, etc. Asher tziv asher alokeinu eschem. So the Chacham also says, what are these mitzvos that God commanded you? So why is the Rasha excluding himself any more than the Chacham? The Rasha says Lachem, and the Chacham says Eschem. They're both saying the same thing. So what's the major difference? And Rabbi Friend quotes the Shemen HaTov, who says that if you look at the Psukim, upon which these passages in the Haggadah are based, it's very clear what the distinction is. Because when the Chacham asks his question, and when the Tam asks his question, the Torah says they ask it Machar. They ask the question tomorrow. The Rasha needs an answer right now. What's the difference? Explains the Shemen HaTov. That we live, as Jews, we live lives of Nasav and Ishma. We do Hashem's Ratzon. We follow Hashem's will. We follow the Torah. We follow the halacha. We have questions. We can ask those questions. But first we follow. First we do what we need to do. First we observe. Then we can ask the questions. Machar, tomorrow. Then we can ask the questions. Then we can delve into it. Then we can analyze. But that's machar. That's how the Chacham asks his question. Even though he's, quote-unquote, excluding himself. But when it comes to the Rasha, that's not good enough. He doesn't observe first and ask questions later. Ask questions machar. Right now, he needs to know the answers. And if he doesn't get the answers right now, he's not interested. Then it's not for him. Then it's your religion and not mine. In essence, it's really an arrogance. That comes from an arrogance. Because that means that it's all about me. It's all about my understanding. It's all about wrapping my head around these things. It's not about the Ribono Shel Olam. It's not about serving Hashem. It's about serving me. If I get it, if I understand it, I'll do it. But if not, I won't. That comes from an arrogance. And that's really the root of the problem with the Rasha. The Kutzker Rebbe used to say that if you look at the Ein Kelokeinu after Shabbos Davening, so what do we say? Ein Kelokeinu, Ein Kadonenu, etc. And then we say, Mi Kelokeinu. First we proclaim our faith. Ein Kelokeinu, there's no other God like our God. First we proclaim our faith, unwavering emunah in Hashem. Now we can ask questions. Mi Kelokeinu, Mi Kadonenu, we can ask questions. That's how the Kutzker explained it. Rabbi Friend concludes this by asking, you know, why is it that we label the Rasha so quickly? You know, his question seems to be legitimate. He's asking, you know, the question sounds like an innocent question. So he answers with the story with Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, with Reb Chaim Brisker, and with this we'll conclude. Reb Chaim Brisker, of course, lived at the time of the Haskalah, where many of the yeshiva students were going off the derech. They were getting, you know, they were getting swayed by the currents of the time and the trends of the time, and they were thinking and analyzing sometimes a little too much, and they went in a wayward fashion, away from Torah and away from mitzvos. So very later on in life, there was a student who used to learn in the Volozhin Yeshiva, where Reb Chaim used to be Rosh Yeshiva, and he bumped into Reb Chaim, and the student said, you know, Rebbe, I had many, many questions. I have many, many questions. So Reb Chaim said to him, he said, I'm happy to deal with your questions. I just have one question for you before we begin with your questions. When did you begin having these questions? Before you were Machal Shabbos or after you were Machal Shabbos? And the young man turns to Reb Chaim and he says, after I was Machal Shabbos. I all of a sudden I came to all these questions. So Reb Chaim looks at the boy and he says, I would be happy to discuss your questions all night, but you don't have questions. You have answers. You have terutzim. You have excuses. You don't nishkin kashas. You don't have kashas. You have terutzim. And so often, you know, these questions that people have are not necessarily because of deep philosophical problems that they're grappling with. Sometimes they are. But sometimes they're justifications. Sometimes they're excuses for a lifestyle that they're leading because of the Yetzer Hara. I once had a conversation with a Rebbe who has more experience than I do. Many years more experience than I do. And I remember discussing and saying, you know, some of these boys have real questions in Emunah, questions about the, you know, existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and how he operates in this world. And he looked at me and he said, some of these boys might have questions. He said, but a lot of these boys are just high school kids. They come up with the questions afterwards. You see, they go to Israel and all of a sudden, you know, they turn their lives around. What happened? All of a sudden, all their philosophical questions were answered? No. They have a Yetzer Hara. They're high school kids. They may not be living life exactly the way that they know that they should. And what happens? They have questions as justifications. They have questions. They're making excuses for their behavior. Again, not to chas v'shalom, you know, not to chas v'shalom minimize the questions that people ask, and we always have to take them seriously. But to recognize that so often, these questions, like the Rasha, there's something deeper. There's something going on in the lifestyle and his commitment or lack thereof to Torah and to mitzvos. And the questions that are really terutzim, they're really excuses that come later. So just some insight into the Chacham and the Rasha. We'll stop here for today. And Amir Tzah Hashem, looking forward to continuing tomorrow.